Good evening. This is Peter Welch. Welcome to our statewide telephone town hall meeting on impeachment. I'll get started now with some brief opening remarks, and then I'll turn it over to you to ask questions. Remember, if you have a question, any question you'd like to ask, press *3 on your phone. And finally, if you want to get now or later some helpful background on impeachment, you can go to my website, welch.house.gov. We've posted some documents on the history and the process of impeachment, as well as documents related to this particular impeachment. You'll also find two articles of impeachment regarding President Trump that the House will vote on this Wednesday, as well as the Intelligence Committee's report on our investigation. I want to start with a few opening remarks. First of all, what is impeachment? Impeachment is an extremely consequential authority that is vested in the Constitution in the House of Representatives. And the history of impeachment goes back to a debate, a very vigorous debate by our founding fathers. The question was, should there be a power in the Constitution that under extreme circumstances would enable the House of Representatives to conduct an inquiry on impeachment? The founding fathers believed that was absolutely essential because they believed that that ultimately had to be a remedy to be used rarely, but in circumstances where a public official, the president, acted beyond in contradiction to the public trust. So the impeachment power was essentially something that our founding fathers decided had to be available to a Congress, independent of whether it was a Republican or Democrat or Federalist Congress, to hold a president accountable. Second, I want to talk about the two fundamental issues that are at stake. So much of this debate appears to be just the usual partisan back and forth that many people, myself included, think do not help us. But there are two principles that do help us and are essential to the endurance of our democracy. One, the rule of law. Our Constitution establishes very clearly that no person is above the law. Nobody, including the President of the United States. The second principle in our Constitution is separation of powers in co-equal branches of government. Our founding fathers had a debate about how to make certain that we did not have an emergence in our democracy of unilateral power, autocratic power. And of course, keep in mind, that was at the time when we were separating ourselves from a monarch. And the way the framers set up our government is that we had competing and co-equal branches of government, the judiciary that ultimately would decide on the constitutionality of laws, the executive who would enforce it, and the legislature that would pass the laws and also have accountability power through the impeachment clause. So when I think of our democracy and what is essential, it's not so much who is president, who is a member of Congress or in the Senate. It's whether we adhere, all of us, to those bedrock constitutional principles of rule of law and accountability and respecting the fact that we have to have competing powers between the equal branches of government. Now, what did President Trump do that has led us, in the view of many of us, to this point? One, he used his power as president, a high public trust, to impose on Ukraine to take an action, conduct and announce an investigation against the person he regarded as his chief political rival in 2020, Joseph Biden, an investigation. That was for his personal benefit. It was not at all for the national security benefit of the people of the United States. And impeachment goes fundamentally to that question of using public trust for private personal gain. I believe, and we can discuss this during the call, the evidence that President Trump did this is incontrovertible. And in fact, in the committee hearings that I've been part of, none of my colleagues have challenged that basic fact that I just announced. The second question is the separation of powers. Our democracy has endured for well over 240 years because we've had competing branches of government. We've made certain that there are checks and balances. In the past, when presidents have been subject to the impeachment authority of the House, none of them have liked it. They've hated it. President Nixon, President Clinton, and Andrew Johnson in 1865. But in every instance, those presidents who were being investigated acknowledged the authority in the Constitution of the impeachment inquiry responsibility of the House. And they provided witnesses, including their chiefs of staff. They provided documents in response to subpoenas or congressional requests. What President Trump has done in this case is unique. He has repudiated that the Congress has any authority whatsoever to do the investigation, making him completely beyond accountability. And during the course of this investigation, he's rejected all efforts by the part of Congress, on the part of Congress, to obtain documents that would potentially exonerate him and possibly incriminate him. He's refused to have any of his administration officials testify. And the evidence we have, fortunately, comes from people who decided to come forward, basically career civil servants, despite the president's injunction. So the issue for us in Congress on Wednesday is to decide whether that conduct merits impeachment. Those are the questions. I've had an opportunity, of course, to be very much involved as a member of the Intelligence Committee. And you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about Ukraine and we're talking about foreign policy. We're talking about things that in our everyday lives generally don't engage us. But it comes down to a very simple analogy. Think about how you or I would feel if we learned that the mayor of a city in Vermont, when requested by the police chief to promote a budget to get a couple of more police officers and a couple of more cruisers, the mayor said, "I'll do it, but on the condition that you announce you're investigating my political rival." We know how we'd all react to that. It would be totally improper. We'd want that mayor gone, and we'd take action. So with those opening remarks, let's open it up for questions. And I really look forward to hearing from anyone and everyone. If you want to ask a question, press star 3 at any time during this call. And our first question is from Kelly in Essex. Go ahead, Essex Junction. Go ahead, Kelly.
I just want to say how grateful I am that we don't have to convince you that no one's above the law. I'm feeling really discouraged about the lack of courage across the aisle, and I wonder if you have any sense from your Republican colleagues how we can break through that. It's feeling unbreakable at the moment.
Well, you've identified something that's disturbing to all of us. It is very partisan now, and in fact, even if you look at the polling, Democrats are very much in favor of impeachment, Republicans very much opposed, and there's very little discussion about the merits of the case. And it's a function of our polarized society. I can tell you how I try to approach it. I try to work with anybody and everybody who wants to try to solve a problem, and I've had some good success here in doing that. You know, prescription drugs. We passed legislation in the House to bring down the cost of prescription drugs by $500 billion. And some of my colleagues wondered whether this would be, quote, if we were successful, a victory for President Trump. My view is, if it's good for the American people, it's good for all of us. So we've got this partisanship and division in this country. We all know it. But I think that the best way each of us can try to address that, whether we're in Congress or we're on the local school board or we're just working with our neighbors, is to be to listen and to have mutual respect and to get us back to those Vermont values that we try to work together to achieve the common good. Our next question comes from Cyrus in Moncton. Go ahead, Cyrus.
Yes, I was curious. You there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I was curious why you're interested in supporting a party that's going to divide the country so deeply. Revolutionary War is where Vermont started, so yeah. Why would you want to participate in possibly a Revolutionary War?
Well, it's a fair question. And you're reflecting the reservations I've had on using the impeachment authority that Congress has in the Constitution. And in fact, a number of there's been a long discussion here about using the impeachment authority. And the real tipping point, including for many of my colleagues, was the revelation of President Trump's effort to get Ukraine to help him in his 2020 campaign. And if you remember, the president made that famous phone call, do me a favor, though. He did that on July 25th. And that the day before that, Director Mueller testified in the Intelligence Committee about his investigation where he documented, and everyone knows this is true, that it was the Russians in 2016 that interfered in our election. And he feared that this would be the new normal. And the day after that, we had our own president soliciting foreign interference in the 2020 election. And what makes this so serious to me, is what's more important than the integrity of our elections and who should have the authority to decide who is our president? But that's you and me and all Vermonters and all Americans. That's it. So this rose to a level of seriousness where as politically volatile and divisive as impeachment is, I came to the conclusion that it was constitutionally imperative to protect those constitutional standards. No one's above the law and maintaining the separation of powers. So thank you for your question. Our next question comes from Pat in Rutland. Go ahead, Pat.
Congressman Welch, I lived in the Washington, D.C. area for a long time. And I've never seen a president tarnish the presidency like he has. I can understand why the Republicans won't own up to the fact when you've got absolute proof of what he's done that they can't be any different. My question really is, though, if he's not impeached and this is just a game, what happens? Because the man has been a traitor in many ways. He has... When he was in France recently, when he was in England, he put our country down. I mean, he's done a million things, but you've only got proof on this one. You know, I understand that. But I'm just wondering, actually, what's going to happen?
Well, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I expect, as most you've been reading this, that the House will vote, unfortunately, on partisan lines for the impeachment articles against President Trump. In the Senate, Mitch McConnell is indicated that he wants to have a so-called very quick trial, and there's not been any indication from my Republican counterparts in the Senate that they are open to hearing more evidence. My hope in the Senate, where they can set the rules of the trial, is that, in fact, they will request information from the president, get documents from Vice President Pence, get documents and testimony from Secretary Pompeo, from Mick Mulvaney. You know, there's a lot of people that we sought to have testify in the House, and the president rejected our subpoenas and efforts. Well, I would like to see the Republican senators make a request to the president to get the evidence. And if the president has exculpatory evidence, he'll have an opportunity to present it. But you would have Republicans requesting the evidence as opposed to the president being able to dismiss the request for evidence is something that Nancy Pelosi wanted. But the bottom line here, if this impeachment goes through the House and doesn't in the Senate, then there's going to be an election coming up, and ultimately it'll be the American voters that have the final say about our future. Our next question comes from Lauren in North Hero. Lauren, go ahead. Lauren? Go ahead, Lauren.
This is all about a political process designed to obscure the president.
Lauren.
The chairman said
All right. Sorry, Lauren, we can't get you. Our next question comes from June in Craftsbury. Go ahead, June.
I had asked the question about the tipping point, but you have answered that. So I'll take this opportunity to ask another question, and that is, how is it that our elected officials have reached the point of their own interests being primary rather than the country's interests being primary, and we really being a government of the people, by the people, and for the people?
Well, you know, you've just expressed the heart of my concern here, because anyone who's elected to public office has a public trust, and that is true of those serving on the school board. It's true of those of us serving in Congress, and it's certainly true above all to the President of the United States. And the one thing that an elected official should never betray is the public trust. And doing something because you're in public office for your personal gain has to be off limits. And obviously, where, in my view, President Trump wanted to get Ukraine to help him in his campaign by announcing an investigation against the Bidens, and he withheld a White House meeting that Ukraine desperately needed. He withheld $400 million in aid, including important military aid, to protect to give the Ukrainians an opportunity to fight against the Russians. An aid, by the way, that was supported by my Republican as well as Democratic colleagues. That is an abuse of the public trust. Now, my experience, even with many of my Republican colleagues who I disagree with on many issues, is that they're good, honest, and honorable people. What I do know is that it's a very tough call for them. It's a very tough situation for them because the people they represent are strongly in support of the president. So it's for them to decide where they have to make a decision to do what the Constitution may require or not. And all of us have to make our own decision on this. But I really do appreciate your expression of what I think most Vermonters believe is our responsibility. Our next question is from Stephen in Castleton. Go ahead, Stephen.
Okay, we're here.
Go ahead.
Can you hear us?
I can. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, we actually have a couple of questions for you. Both of us do.
Yeah.
Why were there no witnesses allowed before Schiff and Nadler from the Republican side? Why, you know, and don't tell me that the only reason it wasn't was because President Trump wouldn't allow it. That's kind of a cop-out.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, don't you think that Trump, the reason he was asking for the scoop on Biden and Hunter was not for the election in 2020, it was for the election of 2016 to see how the Ukrainians interfered in that.
Along with the Russians.
Along with the Russians. We know that the Ukrainians interfered. You take it from here.
Okay, I'll try to answer those as best I can, and thank you. First of all, on the question of witnesses, the rules that Congress operated under with respect to witnesses were the rules that were promulgated by the Republicans when they were last in the majority. And the question of witnesses had to do with, A, requesting that your witnesses appear, but, B, the witnesses had to have something relevant to testify to with respect to the underlying question. So, like, if you're in a court and let's say there's a case about somebody stealing property, neither side can call witnesses who just don't have anything relevant to the particular question before the court. So a lot of the effort on the part of my Republican colleagues to get witnesses were essentially like to get Biden in, to get Hunter Biden in. And in my view, and you probably disagree with me, but in my view, that had nothing to do with what the president did in trying to get the Ukraine president to conduct that investigation. Secondly, on the Ukraine investigation, you're giving the President Trump the benefit of the doubt that he wanted to get to the bottom of what Ukraine's involvement was in 2016. And that's one of the points that's one of the arguments the president makes. You know, unfortunately, the overwhelming evidence from the Mueller report and from our own intelligence agencies is that there was a concerted, energetic, state-run effort on the part of Russia to interfere in our elections, and it was very effective. And they also concluded there was no similar effort on the part of Ukraine. The total sum of evidence about Ukraine, quote, interfering was some Ukrainians individually writing articles that they supported Clinton, and I think other people supported Trump. That's not state-sponsored interference, and it's a categorically different thing. My conclusion from listening to all of the evidence is that that was a fiction that the president was promoting as a way to try to defend from the obvious, and that is that there was huge interference, systematic interference by Russia and not by Ukraine. So that's the conclusion I came to on the basis of the evidence. By the way, remember, if anyone would like to ask a question, press *3 on your phone at any time during the call. Also, I just want to let people know, if you'd like to receive my monthly email newsletter, press *1 on your phone. And that's me giving you a report about what's going on, and it allows you to email me back if there's any questions on your mind. So if you'd like to get my email newsletter, press *1 now, and we'll get you on the list. Our next question comes from Carmen in Burlington. Go ahead, Carmen.
Hi, Peter. I listened to, the majority of the testimony, and it's really hard for me to listen when I hear people who didn't get to hear the testimony. And I really appreciate the Democrats, doing this. It's so important. So because this is being portrayed as Democrats doing something nefarious to our president, what I'm wondering is, can you get any Republicans who are willing to step forward and be leaders and saying, you know, going against that tide and breaking it up, that it's not a Democrat thing. It's
right.
It's people who don't want our government, our president, to be doing this. And I'm wondering, even if it's Republicans outside the State House, like, you know, people who, I'm just wondering what can be done to stop
right.
the game of it's just some Democratic scheme.
Well,
like
let me try to.
They got all these people from all around the world
right.
to say things that glued together in a very clear scheme by our president.
Well, let me try to address that as best I can. But I definitely share your lament on that. By the way, there are a number of my former colleagues, Bob Inglis from South Carolina, and other Charlie Dent, who I serve with on the Ethics Committee, and they're asking that same question of the Republican colleagues. But this goes back to an earlier caller expressing frustration that I think many of us have, both Republicans and Democrats, about how partisan it is. But let me just say another thing, too. The Trump defense has been to make it partisan. He's saying this is a witch hunt. It's all fake, and we don't have any authority to do it. What the president hasn't done is explain what his phone call and request was to President Zelensky. And what he hasn't done is let us have access to Vice President Pence, who, according to Mr. Sondland, or Ambassador Sondland, was in the loop, or Secretary Pompeo, who was in the loop, or Mick Mulvaney, who said, get used to it. This is the way it's going to be. So instead of talking about the merits, the president has made the Democrats the adversary here, and that's his excuse for not answering the basic question of what was up with that phone call and that request. And I want to be somewhat sympathetic to my Republican colleagues. They would pay a political price for sticking their head you know, out of the foxhole. It's very, very challenging for them in this environment. Now, I don't know what, you know, I'd like to think I would make whatever the politics were on something with this kind of constitutional significance that I would make the call on the basis of my constitutional conclusion. All I can control is my own behavior. And what I tried to do in those hearings was stick to the facts, to ask questions to get information that you could hear, and not to just make speeches that were critical of others. So thank you very much. Our next question comes from Joe in Benson. Go ahead, Joe.
Good evening. I would like to know, moving forward, if our president is not impeached and he wins the election, will you try it again? And why should I even bother to vote? If the people can't speak, the Democratic Party should speak for us?
No.
I don't understand.
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm troubled personally by using the power of impeachment. You know, the most important principle for us is that we respect the outcome of elections. I did not vote for President Trump, but he won. He won in the Electoral College, but he won. And he was entitled to, and the people who voted for him are entitled to have that election respected. But there's also another principle, and that's the impeachment authority that our founders vested in the House of Representatives to be used on those occasions where in the judgment of the members of the House, the president breaches public trust and duty. And I believe we're at that case, that situation. And that's why, among other reasons, I want to have this telephone town hall, because I owe an explanation, particularly to folks who do support President Trump or did support President Trump, as to why I'm taking this action. And then it's the authority of Vermonters to decide to hold me accountable, because I'm accountable to you. President Trump is accountable to his oath of office and to all of us. But I do take seriously your expression that your vote should count. And my answer to you is that my duty under the Constitution with the impeachment authority is to be open, honest, and as fair as I can be, and then to accept your judgment in the future as to what I did. Our next question comes from Janet in Rutland. Go ahead, Janet.
Well, first of all, let me thank you, Representative Welsh, for doing this telethon, if you want to call it that. It makes me proud to be a Vermonter, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
Now, at dinner tonight, my husband and I were having this discussion. That's why I so much wanted to present it to you. On the news, they're telling us that the senators have decided how they're going to vote. How can they vote without hearing evidence? And if they do so, can they be held in contempt of court? And is this voting considered a court-sanctioned event? That's sort of a three questions
yeah.
in one, but I know your time is limited.
No, that's a good question. But my answer may depress you. Under the authority, the impeachment procedures, the Senate tries the case. But they, even though they're in effect the jurors, they establish all the rules that will apply to that trial. They do. They're not rules like when I was a lawyer and I tried cases, but the rules I had to follow were established beforehand. And the jury that was hearing my case was not the one that decided the rules. They were the result of long efforts on the part of people in the judicial process. The way it works with the Senate is they get to decide the rules, and then they get to vote. They can take evidence, or they don't have to take evidence. And they have their independent and exclusive authority to do this as they see fit. Now, I'm alarmed by some of the things I see happening over there. Senator McConnell has said that he's coordinating actively with the White House. So how does a juror essentially coordinate with the defendant? I mean, think about a case in Rutland County, and you had the juror and his lawyer, the jurors basically working with the defendant to coordinate the defense. So that's disturbing, but they do have that authority to do it. It's why I'm urging my colleagues in the Senate, get the evidence, because that just seems fair and common sense, your point. And we have not been able to get some of these people who have enormous information, like Pompeo, the Secretary of State, or Mulvaney, the office, the Chief of Staff, or the Vice President. The Senate could ask them to come in, or compel them to come in, or tell President Trump unless they come in, they're going to regard that as an admission. So that's the way it works. It's a law unto itself in the Senate as to how they conduct this. So thank you so much for your question. Our next question comes from John in Guilford. Go ahead, John.
Yes, thank you, Representative Welch. Actually, my question builds right off of Janet's question. They're from Rutland. Given that we know that the Senate is going to exonerate the president coming up on the trial, I'd like to consider how the damage of the rule of law that the Senate's going to incur cause by this dismissive of the impeachment articles. Has there been any discussion about using censure or not forwarding the articles of impeachment forward to the Senate so that they don't get the opportunity to shut down the case and give the president an opportunity to say that that he's been exonerated?
Well,
thank you very much.
You know, yeah, very good question. And along the way, there's been a lot of discussion about what's the right thing to do and whether even to proceed. It really changed after evidence about after the whistleblower came out with the Ukraine call, and then the president released the transcript where he explicitly asked for a favor in his 2020 campaign. But what I'd say, I'll tell you my own personal struggle with this, because number one, impeachment is very divisive. There's no question about that. Number two, if we impeach here and the president is acquitted in the Senate, does that establish a bad precedent? And it's not going to be good. So that's a fair concern. But at the end of the day, I ultimately believed that given that as a member of the House has the constitutional responsibility with the impeachment inquiry authority, I had to make a decision as to whether or not the conduct constitutionally required me to act and support an impeachment inquiry, regardless of the political consequences, regardless of the fine points of trying to come to a conclusion about what's, quote, the best political way to proceed. So it's always been politically inconvenient, but with the Ukraine, I think it really became constitutionally essential for us to proceed. And I don't know what's down the road, but I came to the conclusion this was my duty. And we'll see. But thank you. Our next question comes from David in Websterville. David?
The question I have is this whole thing, there's been so many hearings and all that stuff, it just seems to me that to come down to this being just two articles of impeachment, doesn't you seem that seem a little weak when you think about all the stuff that has been in the hearings?
Well, I would have supported obstruction charges that were in the Mueller report. There was an immense amount of evidence about the president attempting to thwart the Mueller investigation, trying to fire Mueller, fire the FBI director. There the documented interference there, so I could have been supportive of more articles. I think at the end of the day, this was a decision by the chairs of our committees and the speaker, and I understand the reasoning, and I think there's a lot of merit to it. The most clear violation, comprehensible to the American people, I think, is what the president did in trying to use his public position to leverage assistance from Ukraine on his reelection and withholding that military aid and the opportunity of a White House meeting that was essential to President Zelensky. That's as clear as it can be. The evidence were the president's own words. And all of the testimony that followed that elaborated on it and reinforced it. And then secondly, the president's blanket, explicit, categorical rejection of the authority of the House of Representatives to even do an inquiry. So I think the merit of that is Speaker Pelosi and our committee chair saw it, was that it was clear. And we had clear and documentary evidence to support that. So I could have supported more, but I think there's some wisdom in the decision that they made. I just want to remind the callers that if you'd like to ask a question, hit *3 anytime during the call, and you'll be in the queue. And I also want to remind folks that if you'd like to get my monthly e-newsletter, I'll talk about this and other issues, press 1 on your phone, and you'll be signed up. Our next question comes from Tala in Stamford. Jala, go ahead.
Hi, it's Tala. Thank you.
Tala, thank you.
Call. Well, I got so many questions. Number one, I'm just not a political person, but I've been watching these hearings online, and you know, I come to find out that Obama, I believe, was exonerated for similar things, and nothing came of that. And I think the military aid issue, the timing wasn't in cue as far as what the Democratic people were thinking. And I just feel the Democratic doesn't have all the information. Neither do the Republicans.
Uh-huh.
I guess that's kind of like three questions in one. I have a lot more, but I believe Obama, from what I heard, kind of started this thing with Russia, not Trump. And that the military aid, they didn't know about the issue with not getting the money and for what reason until after. I just think both parties just don't have.
Well, let me try as best I can to answer that.
Okay.
Well, first of all, the Obama administration did not support military aid to Ukraine. And the Trump administration did. President Trump withheld it, but that's the irony here. What the Obama administration did work energetically on, by the way, with the support of my Republican colleagues, was trying to crack down on what was rampant corruption in Ukraine. And among the tools that the Obama administration used and other administrations have used was imposing conditions on the release of aid. In other words, we'll give you aid, but you've got to establish a judicial system. We'll give you aid, but you've got to eliminate this law where people who serve in their equivalent of Congress are immune from prosecution. So throughout the years, Republican and Democratic presidents have used aid and conditioned it on trying to achieve a public policy goal that's consistent with our national interest. And that's what Mick Mulvaney, the chief of staff, was talking about when he said, we've always had conditionality and get over it. What's unique about what President Trump did is that his condition was not based on something that was going to advance our national security interest. His conditionality was something about advancing his own personal political interests. That's the line a president can't cross, and he did. So that's why I support that article of impeachment. Our next question comes from Jerry in Albany. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, how many different people or sections of government do we have to rely on? I know there's the House of Representatives. I know there's the Senate, but there is also a third one. And what is that?
You mean the executive, the president?
Yeah. If the House of Representatives has a problem with the Senate or anything, what do you do to get that conflict? Is there a third branch?
The judiciary.
Yeah, what do you do? They're always arguing. I've seen Obama argue with them. I've seen his get his big guy to attempt to court with the Congress.
Right.
And nothing happened, right?
Well, I don't know what specifically you're talking about.
Well, if you can't get answers, and there's an executive privilege, if you can't get answers, what is the next step? That's the third branch of government.
That's true. Let me try to answer your question as best I can. You're actually given a good explanation of what I was trying to talk about with the separation of powers, our three branches of government, and how important they are. And there's always tension between them. You know, the executive wants to do more sometimes than the legislature. Sometimes the legislature will pass a law and the Supreme Court says it's unconstitutional. So there's a tug of war that goes on. And if you're in one branch and you get thwarted by the other, you can be frustrated. But the whole principle that our founders used to do that was they thought that tug of war in the end, as frustrating and difficult as it was, would help preserve our democracy because you wouldn't have the consolidation of absolute power anyway, anywhere. Well, in order for that to continue, all of us who serve in our respective branches of government have to have respect for the constitutional authorities that the other branches have. What President Trump has done here with this impeachment inquiry is he said, we don't have the right to do it. You know, he disagrees with us, obviously, but he's saying we don't even have a right to do an inquiry into what the whole deal was with Russia, or pardon me, with Ukraine. And as I mentioned to an earlier caller, President Nixon hated impeachment. President Clinton hated it. But in both cases, they provided documents requested by Congress and let Congress do its job, and they provided witnesses, including their chiefs of staff and cabinet officers. President Trump rejects that, and he's really putting himself beyond accountability and oversight. And if that happens, that constitutional system of checks and balances crumbles. That's my deep and abiding concern. Our next call comes from Lynn in Bristol. Go ahead, Lynn.
Hi, Peter. My question has to do with trust and the division in this country. Since the day President Trump was elected, somebody has been after him. He hasn't had one day of peace, and this seems like one more thing. And I don't believe it's him that has divided this country. I believe it's because there are some of us who think one way and some of us who believe another way. And whoever has a majority or whoever can yell the loudest or whatever wins.
Yeah.
And whether he is impeached or not, this country is going to be divided. And I don't know how anybody can trust anybody in the government to do something that's not in your own interest.
Yeah, you know,
I don't
feel like
it's in my interest to hear all this stuff. And I think the United States is really being made a fool of.
Well, let me try to address your comments. And I want to say, what you say has a lot of truth to it. And it honestly makes me somewhat heartsick. Because, you know, we have rules and we have regulations. But ultimately, what keeps this democracy going is when we have mutual trust and mutual respect. And that mutual trust and mutual respect means that just because somebody disagrees with you, you don't question whether they have the same dedication and patriotic desire to make our country stronger. And, you know, I served in the Vermont legislature for a number of years, and I was in the minority and I was in the majority. And I have such fond memories of people there who had sharp disagreements, having mutual respect. And in Washington, I see that eroding. And I think what you're talking about is just us against them or them against us is very, very unfortunate. And in fact, whether we do or don't have an impeachment outcome, whether he's ultimately impeached or not, we have to get back to some of those abiding principles that you're talking about, where we're not just at each other's throats because we disagree, but we're trying to find the common ground. It's the way I try to operate as your representative here in Congress. It's the way we operate in Vermont. But it's unfortunately not dominant here in D.C. If I can, let's go to our next caller. It's June in St. Albans. Go ahead, June.
Hi, Representative Wilt. I have a comment and then a couple quick questions. And one is that my comment is that I don't vote party lines.
Mm-hmm.
I vote for the person, and I will absolutely vote for you again because I totally support that you're risking re-election, that people might not be happy with you, but you're upholding our Constitution, and you're holding the President of the United States to the law, which is, if that doesn't happen, I don't know where our country's going to go. It's basically sending a message to any future president, he can do whatever he wants. And my questions are, so many people are going back. I mean, Representative Stefanik from New York Republicans keep changing the focus, like, what about Biden and what about Obama and what about this? And isn't it, I read somewhere that the Biden and Burisma that whole situation was investigated by the United States, a joint effort by the United States and Ukraine and another country that I can't remember. And, I mean, can you talk about that? And the second
question,
if I can just get in there, is you said that the Senate can ask Pompeo and Mulvaney to testify. Can the House not ask them and the administration officials that Trump is ordering not to testify? Can they not be compelled to testify? And is there anything against the head juror from Mitch McConnell from, you know, working with Trump's lawyers?
Well, let me go through those because you're asking really good process questions. Number one, that we subpoenaed many witnesses and the president ordered those witnesses not to respond. We subpoenaed many documents, and the president told his cabinet officials to not provide any of those documents. And he did this while he was saying that if he released all these things, that would exonerate him. And obviously, that's pretty bogus. Now, we have the option of going to court, but the one case of going to court, we ultimately succeeded, but it took six months to get a ruling from a district court. It's got to go to the appellate court. It's got to go to the Supreme Court. So as a practical way of getting access to this information, Trump wants us to go the judicial route because it'll be well past the next election before we even get an answer from the court. So it's not an effective remedy. What's different about the Senate making this request would be you've got a Republican majority over there. And I think it would be much more difficult for the president to blow off a request from Mitch McConnell in the Republican Senate. Hey, send us in these people and they'll tell us what they know and then we can get the evidence. Because at the heart of this, I think a lot of people want to get as much evidence as possible so they can make a decision and come to your own conclusion. But if essentially you have the Senate Majority Leader, Senator McConnell, hand in glove with the White House lawyer, you obviously are not going to get an outcome that's based on the evidence. So that's the big issue. Let's go to our next question, and that's from Megan in Saxon's River. Megan?
Hi, Congressman Walsh. Thank you so much for doing this town hall. I really wanted to ask, I guess, kind of a 2/3-part question. The first is, are you afraid if the impeachment isn't validated with a vote by the Senate that the Democrats are going to come off as weak in their attempts at coming at Donald Trump? And I guess to follow up that, if the opposite happens, if we manage to get some confirmation from the Senate and the impeachment goes through, why is it not being talked about that there is a lot to fear from a Pence presidency, even if it's only for a few months?
Sure.
And also that in turn that so many of the Democratic candidates are running on a platform of just anti-Trump, 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 rather than what they can offer the American people. don't the Democrats face losing their main objective for running?
Right. So let me try to address those. And I'll start with your last point. I totally agree with you that the Democrats running for president should be advancing their positive agenda for the future and not just talking about Trump. Number two, do we risk looking weak if we proceed and there's not a conviction in the Senate? My view, you're never weak when you're doing your duty. And I can't control what the Senate does. I can control what I do. And I've come to the conclusion that my duty is to support impeachment. So whatever the Senate does beyond my control, but I'll have done what I regard as my duty. Third, I wouldn't get all excited about a Pence presidency if it came to that, but really the question is, what's the message if, in fact, we proceed and put limits on the abuse of authority by a president? That is a principle that is very beneficial to us as Americans and to our constitutional rule of law. We'll survive a bad president. We won't survive the crumbling of our Constitution. Our next question comes from Richard in Burlington. Richard, go ahead.
Yes. I'm all in favor of impeachment, but I would have liked to have seen a third article involving the Emoluments Clause. It seems to me that the president has enriched himself financially, and that's as bad as anything he did in the Ukraine. And why couldn't that be included in the impeachment articles as Article 3 or whatever?
Yeah. Well, first, there's a lot of evidence about emoluments. I mean, that you know, that Trump hotel that he owns right a few blocks from the White House is the favorite watering hole where all these foreign visitors buy martinis for $25 or $30. And they all stay there, and it all goes to the Trump bottom line. And according to one report I read, Ivanka Trump made $4 million from that hotel. So it's pretty shocking. But in order to pursue that case, we would have had to have access to a lot more evidence that is not yet available, and those are long and drawn-out court fights. So on a practical level, putting that case together faced a lot of impediments, even though it has, I think, some significant potential. And going back to an earlier caller, we decided to proceed on something that is very specific to the personal duties of the president, foreign policy, and where we had his own words showing that he was using his public trust to try to achieve a private gain. Our next question is from Bill in Waterbury. Bill, are you there? I think we lost Bill, so we'll go on to Peter in Pulteney. Peter, go ahead. We lost Peter. But by the way, he was going to ask, how can Trump staff not show up? Unless we go to court, and that takes it long and drawn out, we have to get a judicial order. So a lot of brave public servants came forward despite President Trump telling them not to. Our next question comes from Janet in Greensboro.
Hi. Thank you very much for voting for impeachment. I think you probably answered my question when you talked to Janet from Rutland. But the trial in the Senate is not like any trial I ever was involved in, because there the lawyers could throw out jurors that do what Lindsey Graham's doing and announcing their verdict before they even go to court.
That's right.
And there's no such implement in this current trial, is there?
There is not. No, it's a political rule. The Senate has the authority to try. They're the jurors, and they can set whatever rules they want. And I find it pretty shocking that one of the rules that Senator McConnell is apparently establishing for himself is that he's going to work closely and coordinate everything with White House counsel. I want to go to our next question. It's Jim from Jericho. Jim, go ahead.
Peter, thank you very much for having this. I enjoy these. Peter, I've been a longtime Democrat up until 6 years ago when I decided to become an independent. And I was very shocked that because Hillary didn't get it, the Democratic Party changed their whole thought process to become the party of hate. Everything, if it's against them, you're either a racist or something. And that hurts a lot. The other thing, I heard you say something that kind of baffles me, and it was about election in this country, and it's close to your heart. When our elections are all, I'd say a quarter of them are illegal. I know the Hispanics vote when they shouldn't. They don't have the right if they're not citizens. I'll be back down on the border again in another week for stuff that I do. And I've realized so much that people up here don't have any clue as to what goes on. And I'm not against impeachment. I'm just really shocked at the way the Democrats are doing things.
Well, let me try to address that. First of all, I think it's a total mistake for Democrats to just be against something because President Trump is for it, or the Republicans are for it. And that certainly is not me. Some of my colleagues may do that, but I think that's a dead-end approach. You know, the United States, Canada, Mexico trade agreement is something President Trump wants. We've had some breakthroughs on that, and in all likelihood, I'm going to support it. Some of my colleagues say, hey, that's going to be good for President Trump. I say, hey, if it's good for the American people, I'm for it. I'm trying to bring down the price of prescription drugs. I met with President Trump and Elijah Cummings in April of 2017, and I've been working on that, and President Trump has indicated some support. If he supports that, I think that's great. So your point, we have to have an affirmative agenda, I totally agree with. And the question of what the president did here, though, with abusing his power, that's crossed the line for me. And as I've stated, tried to explain, that's why I support impeachment. We're just about out of time. This hour has gone by fast for me. I really appreciate it. We've got time for one more call. But first, if I didn't get to your question, or if you'd like to make a call or comment and provide feedback, please stay on the line when the call ends, and you'll receive instructions on how to leave a message. And a reminder, visit my website, welch.house.gov, for lots of information on the history and process of impeachment, as well as detailed information on the current impeachment proceedings. And our last call comes from Chris in Swanton. Chris, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. I'm a seven-term village trustee. That's over 21 years. And my constituents really wondered, you know, what good do you expect to come to our average Vermonters if we do indeed the House does impeach and the Senate turns it over? We feel that there are other things that the House should be focusing on, and that this has been somewhat of a waste of good time and money, Vermonters being frugal like we are.
Right.
We would like to see you guys to move forward on, you know, on the opioid abuse, the cost of medicine, border issues, all of the things that really do affect us nationwide every
right.
day.
Well, let me try.
We want to focus on results, and
yeah.
We would really appreciate it. This is my constituents and a lot of my counterparts across northern Vermont that
right.
you consider in voting not to impeach.
So let me answer that. First of all, I want to thank you for your local service. You are, it's real. What you have to do is real all of the time. And talk about accountability. You can't go get a cup of coffee in the morning without having to answer to your constituents. And I want to express how much I respect the work that you do and your colleagues on the board. In 21 years is significant service. Second, you're absolutely right. Impeachment dominates the news, but it's not what's going to cure what ails us. And in the House, where we do have a working majority, we've actually passed a lot of legislation a lot of it with bipartisan support that I think is good for, could be good if we can get it through the Senate. We passed a prescription drug price bill to bring down the cost of prescription drugs by $500 billion over 10 years. We did that last week. We passed gun safety legislation, which would have background checks. We passed some energy conservation legislation. We're trying to do things to help our farmers with the price of milk and how much they're struggling. We got the robocall legislation passed on a strong bipartisan legislation. One of the things I heard about from Vermonters more than anything is how much they hate those robocalls. Now, so your point is a good one. In my defense, we've actually been acting on a legislative agenda, even though the news is dominated by impeachment. But your point is correct. We do have an impediment in the Senate. You know, Senator McConnell is not taking up any of that legislation, and he's just focusing on judicial appointments. So thank you for your work. And believe me, we're working on that legislative agenda. I want to thank every one of you for joining me this evening. And I want to say again, if we didn't get your question, stay on the line, and we'll give you instructions on how to leave a message or a comment. And if you'd like to receive my monthly e-newsletter, press 1. Just press 1 on your phone, and you'll get it. Thank you all so much for participating in this telephone town hall meeting. I really appreciate it, and am so grateful to having this opportunity to represent Vermont. It's really special. And to everyone listening, have a happy holiday. I hope your families are safe and you really enjoy the comfort of each other's company. Good night.